Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 506. Science Faction, you cold-blooded mofo.
What did you call me? Just talking about Science Factions, Bobby.
And speaking of Science Factions, Bobby, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Ricciardo. How are you doing today, Damian?
Who is the man who runs a comedy science podcast that regularly violates the Geneva Convention and other human rights laws? Bobby?
That is true. By giving you what some have described as too many chances, I have indeed offended a lot of people who believe that to be unfair and unjust to all those other comedy co-hosts who don't get nearly as many chances to fail in games like I Call BS.
You know what? I have never once actually cheated because it's like saying the villain who lost in a WWE match cheated. Like, yeah, he did use a chair, but it was scripted. It was a scripted chair.
Damian, after you found out about the Happy Days rule, long after you had any right to complain about it, did you or did you not use the term potsy?
Yes, but that was a sexual fantasy that had nothing to do with science. Maybe lucid dreaming where I wanted potsy to take a few more steps and quit being such a pansy and get past first base.
Oh, dear. And by the by, I got a date for you guys. It looks like our Patreon will launch on November 16th. It looks like that's when we're going to get going. So if you happen to hear our 500 and 501st episode and we referenced all those previous episodes, please go back and listen to those now while they are for free. Afterwards, you can't bitch about it because I am giving you plenty of warning that we are going to make a lot of those behind a paywall. So for all of our loyal fans out there who aren't loyal enough to pay, I guess, that's fine. I understand that. I'm the same way with a lot of podcasts, so I understand that. So if you're not going to be a part of our Patreon, I'm not going to hate on you, but I am going to say you only have 2 more weeks to go back and listen to those back episodes for free. And then after that, that's going to be Patreon only. That's only going to be our super fan Dwayne's, guys like that.
I have a suggestion about our OnlyFans, I'm sorry, Patreon account.
Yes.
One of the tiers, and I noticed that it's not selling really hot right now, and I think it's the wording. Yeah. Right now it says for $200 a month, Damian will show up at your door and open mouth kiss you.
Yes.
What if, and that's not selling real well, what if we changed it to Damian will show up at somebody of your choosing's door and open mouth kiss them?
Well, if you remember the...
I'll be set to Alex Jones a lot.
That particular option we did have on there, but it was only for veterinarian offices, and it was dogs, equids, lizards, and certain species of bird.
Yeah, I'm kind of like a veterinarian, you know, like you humans are like human doctors. You're just trained in kissing humans. I need to be so knowledgeable with how to use my tongue to please a number of species.
Yeah, I mean, you kiss a pit bull the wrong way and you are not getting laid that night.
I'm sorry, Mr. Worldwide. Please give me another chance.
It's the 305. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Article number one, you cold-blooded mofo.
Yes, I am, but I was made this way by years of mistreatment, and I call BS.
You were made this way long before I got to you. You don't blame me for what nature and God and your mom did. You can't blame me for that.
No, but this is where the public record starts, so this is where I could blame you publicly.
I mean, if we are referring to it in terms of God, that public record started a long time ago.
Well, you find me the Damian podcast in heaven, and I'll listen to it. I'll hate fuck it.
And as we learned, if it's on HBO Go, then a lot of this previous scientists will have heard it as well.
I love this show, this podcast. It's like, he's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm character, but way bigger a piece of shit.
Oh, dear. So this is a really interesting article. It actually follows up on an article we did a couple years back where scientists started noting that the human body temperature was much lower than originally calculated. Now, 200 years ago, a German physician calculated the one we all know, 98.6, right? That's what you hear in terms of what a human body temperature is. Now, a few things. One is That was just an average. So it didn't mean everybody walking around at that point had a 98.6 degree Fahrenheit body temperature. It just meant that that was the average healthy person body temperature. And if you were above that, you most likely had a fever, though some people ran hotter. I imagine you, Damien. Damien, you are somebody who always runs hot. Have you ever just taken your temperature when you're not sick?
The irony being, I actually run colder than 98.6 degrees.
Okay.
But it's not like I'm running at like 60.
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, your average person in the Western world does. And we covered this a few years ago, is that, you know, we've noted that that has gone down. In fact, in the UK, the average is 97.9. And in the US, or at least where they did it in Palo Alto, California, it was 97.5. So you're talking about much lower, actually, over the last 200 years. Now, there's a lot of ideas on why that is. You know, 200 years ago, our sanitation wasn't great, so maybe people were just sick all the time or more sick and constantly running fevers.
Eating fewer Tide Pods.
They didn't have, like, AC and heating as good a heating. And so, like, your endothermy was more important, so maybe your temperature had to be up higher, whereas now we are kind of inside all day, and so our temperature, like, if our temperature fluctuates a little bit or is way lower or whatever, like, it's not a big deal anymore. So maybe that was it. There was an idea that just people were just, like, around, walking around doing stuff more, and so therefore they were warmer and stuff.
Wearing more puritanical clothing.
Well, yeah, or even things like ibuprofen that can reduce swelling. If you have, like, swelling and inflammation, that sometimes is accompanied by heat or higher body temperatures. And so maybe that was it. And so there was this idea that this westernization of the world over the past 200 years brought our temperatures down, in some cases almost like a full degree Fahrenheit. And we had covered that and talked a little bit about it. I think this was like in 2015 or something. However, a new paper came out this week that really put it to the test. And they actually did what we said. When we were talking about this was were back in Madhouse in these days, Damien. And when we were talking about this, I think either myself or maybe even Jackie, one of our scientists said, you know, it'd be interesting is let's compare this to like hunter-gatherer groups or something that are around modern day now. Because then, you know, if they're 99 or something and, you know, 200 years ago in Germany it was 98.6 and now in the Western world it's maybe like 97 point something, we can kind of see that decline and that would be something interesting. So this new study looked at the UK, the US, and a group of gatherer horticulturalists. So they're not quite hunter-gatherers. They do farming and stuff, but like the kind of hunter-gatherer lifestyle with some sedimentary farming in a very, very rural part of the rainforests of Bolivia. And something really interesting happened. They observed this group in Bolivia for about 20 years. And over that time, they saw them go down from about the same, like 98.5, to down to 97.7 over 20 years.
How much contact did this tribe have?
Good question. Like they do have contact with people. They're not some isolated group. But however, it's not like they all of a sudden got like high rises and AC units and cars and stuff. Again, they're living horticulturalist gatherer lifestyles. They do have more access to blankets and clothing. So there is some thought that, again, maybe it's that whole you don't need the endothermy as much. Whereas before when they're running around with, you know, more native clothes and didn't have access to wool and cotton and all this stuff, maybe then, you know, it was more important for their temperature to be up higher. Maybe they've gotten better access to medical attention, but that's really debatable because they still really don't have very good access to medical attention. And certainly, like, they don't have better access to medical attention than Germans 200 years ago did, where, you know, that 98.6 was set. So that probably...
Yeah, but their medicine isn't cocaine in Bolivia.
Wait, it is.
Damn it. Yeah, but that's not medicine.
That's what, like, you say. No, it is basically medicine. I'll tell you this, a firsthand experience, you get up to the highlands of Peru and you have to chew some coca when you're going. Otherwise, you will have really bad altitude sickness. It is something you essentially, maybe not everybody, in the group I was with, 90 some odd percent of us needed it. Otherwise, you would get a horrible headache and really bad altitude sickness. And the coca helped you. And they're just like, it's also different. It's just leaves. Like, it's not like cocaine. It's like a mild coffee. Like, it's a little stimulant. You don't get like that. Like
doing a line
fever of
coffee is very painful. I wouldn't recommend it. Your sinuses cannot take that heat.
Oh, you use your nose.
Speaking of orifices, so for 20 years, this tribe just let some scientists, I'm assuming pale face scientists,
yes,
just go and check their oil to determine their temperature. Just, hey, bend over.
I mean, I don't
hunter gather Bolivian man or woman.
I'm not sure why you assume they would be using rectal thermometers. Like, that's their go-to.
I know other thermometers exist, Bobby, but why would you use them?
I don't believe these were rectal exams, believe these were rectal thermometers, but...
Which, by the way, I'd like to point to perhaps a flaw in this study's methodology.
Okay.
200 years ago Germans, that sounds to me like that's certainly a rectal thermometer culture.
Yeah.
Perhaps there is a discrepancy between the rectal thermometry encouraged by the Germans 200 years ago and the more sterile ear or any other temperature taken now. I'm just saying strangers tend to react more poorly now when you jam a thermometer in their butt in today's society.
Rectal thermometry is very Victorian of you, Damien. We were doing urethra thermometry a long time ago.
Is that what all that screaming is coming from the other room? Okay, that makes sense.
The proper way to take a German temperature, Damien, is to put a mercury thermometer up one's urethra and then break it in half while it's still in there.
Good Lord. He's delightfully mad.
Hence the phrase, giving them the old German thermometer.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like that happened to Copernicus. I feel like in his backstory, something like that happened. I know
he was
the dates
totally normal
line up.
Dude.
Hello, yes, my name is Polish astronomer, Prussian astronomer, John Copernicus.
Oh, man, that would be so much of a better story than like the Mad Hatters who were like, you know, getting exposed to mercury by literally like working hats and stuff like that. It's just like, where does your mercury exposure come from? Mainly urethral thermometer incidents.
Like, so basically, a mercury thermometer is Copernicus's radioactive spider or his parents being killed behind a theater.
They're called the Mad Comers. Oh dear. There was this like question now, like, holy shit, we just watched this happen over the course of 2 decades. And by the way, this also takes out a bunch of candidate explanations, because some of the candidate explanations of what happened over the last 200 years were like, hey, maybe their thermometers just weren't so good, which is not really viable because we did have decent thermometers back then and it wouldn't be off by that much consistently and stuff like that. Wouldn't really make sense. But this totally blows it out of the water, because this time over the 20 years, they were literally like using the same fucking thermometer the entire time. So like, it wasn't that. And so we watched it happen over the case of 20 years, what had happened over the case of 200 years in terms of European and North American people. And I gotta say, here's the thing, and I always hate true crime or science stories that have this as part of it, but I gotta be honest, is like, I don't have an answer to tell you. Like, we don't know what this is. This is the observation of right now an unexplained phenomenon. Now, we have some ideas. We can talk about, again, using clothing. We can talk about better healthcare. We could talk about less inflammation. We could talk about maybe they're more sedentary. Maybe you're just like walking around a bunch, you get your temperature up and people aren't doing that.
Decreased horniness.
Clearly, you've never been to a Bolivian village, man.
It's hot. They don't wear a lot. Let me put it that way. Good luck staying flaccid.
They actually called me the mad comer there for a completely different reason.
Please, you cannot come back to our village, sir. You have, Mark Twain, the village. Tom Sawyer, all of these.
Yes, they actually also referred to me as the sticky bandit for a completely different reason.
It is the same reason you kept trying to kill a child who was home alone in our village.
Oh, dear. So we're not 100% sure what this is. Now, I hate those kind of things. I always like to know the answer at the end. But I also love a good mystery. And this is one where we have just found the mystery. And we will spend the next decade or 2 decades trying to solve that mystery. And that's what science does. But right now, it's also kind of neat to be on the cutting edge of what that mystery is. Like, why the fuck are our temperatures dropping? What is this? Is this... Maybe it's none of those things. Maybe it's like fucking climate change. Like, maybe the world is getting hotter and we're getting cooler correspondingly. Who knows? It's just really, really interesting. And what I love is when the first story came out in 2015 or whenever that was, and we saw it and we commented on it, you know, I'm not going to take credit for this. This is a giant international research effort, but I am going to say they probably heard us say, go look at a hunter-gatherer group and do their temperature. And then they did it. Of course, they had been doing it for 20 years. So maybe that might require some kind of time cop type situation.
That was the first, by the way, Time Cop, I want to bring this up because this is something that's baffled me for a while. Time Cop was the first time travel movie that brought up the possibility that if you met yourself on a younger timeline, you couldn't touch that person because you're occupant, you can't occupy the same space as even though you're not, if I should,
yes, you, yeah. you're not. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I picked Time Cop because in the Venn diagram of movies with time travel and sweet ass splits, Time Cop is right in the middle.
It's so bad. Like, it does not hold up well at all. A lot of cool, like, kicking of nitrogen freezing frozen people and shattering. Sure. But if that's not your thing in a movie, yeah, I'd recommend just watching a different.
And by the way, does it hold up well? Would it imply that, like, Time Cop was actually stellar when it came out? And that is just not the case. Like, it did.
How could the Academy overlook Time Cop? Van Damme has been snubbed again.
And the Oscar for Best Splits goes to
Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump.
Meanwhile, Quentin Tarantino's like, no, I've been robbed again.
Uma Thurman and John Travolta are next to him. Like, sorry, guys, we'll get him next year.
Dude, we got to look this up. If it turns out that Time Cop came out in 1994, this segment right here is going to be called gold, because that would just be that's a perfect joke.
It's like they were in the auditorium in fourth grade.
All right, on to article number two. First Denisovan DNA outside of the Denisovan cave in Siberia.
That's what those scientists were doing in my garage. I told them, you got to have a warrant, and then they showed back up with a warrant and took some tests.
Oh, that's where they got the Denisovan DNA?
Yeah, I traffic in some artifacts, if you know what I mean. Mm. I fence some things. I'm the lowest quality fence in all of Southern California.
Get that Denisovan D.
Yeah, that's my payment.
So while that's a headline, I guess a more accurate way to say this is, we had Denisovan DNA in that cave, and we also had Denisovan DNA outside of that cave, but only in the sense that it exists in modern human beings. So, like, we have Denisovan DNA carried around by individual Homo sapiens running around, especially in Eastern Asia right now. But this is the first time we have found remnants of actual Denisovan's DNA, not just pulled out of human beings, unless it was in that Siberian cave. So let's talk about that. We talked about the Denisovans, or as Damien has named them, the Denny Bears.
Way better. Quite a bit. I can't wait for nature to finally jump on my side, because
I gotta say, it is a better name. It's objectively a better name. So these Denny Bears, these are essentially a cousin species to Neanderthals. So think about it as we have this species, most likely, we're not 100% sure, but Homo heidelbergensis running around, starting about...
That's another hominid that could use a fucking name upgrade as well.
Yeah, but. Well, if it makes you feel better, in Africa, it's sometimes referred to as Homo rhodesiensis. So if that makes it a little bit better.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's good. Let's praise those proud white South Africans and their history on the continent.
Yeah, and Heidelberg is actually a spot in Germany. So all around, there's a lot of problems going on.
That's very Caucasian-centric view of science.
That is the parent species to Homo sapiens. So Homo sapien evolved from that species, that Heidelbergensis group, in Africa somewhere around 300 some odd thousand years ago. But that group was widespread, and that group was also in Europe. And in Europe, that group evolved into a species that became the Neanderthals and the Denisovans. So they are cousin species to us. Both are equally as related to us in that sense, in terms of divergent evolution. And those guys evolved in Eurasia. Basically, there is kind of almost like a dividing line down the middle of Eurasia, where on one half you have the Denisovans and one half you have the Neanderthals. There are some places that overlap.
Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, and the Denisovan cave that we know of in Siberia, that is the main cave where we discovered them. There was also some Neanderthals there, so they overlapped. There was some genetic interchange between them. We also know the Denisovans bred into our own species. In fact, they bred into it at least twice from different groupings. There was one breeding event that happened that were from East Asian Denisovans, and then one that is only really now in the groups that are like Aboriginal Australians, Papua New Guineans, that we think happened in island Southeast Asia. So this is a widespread species that basically ranged from the middle of Eurasia all through what is now those Southeast Asian islands, though many of those were just peninsulas at the time.
We've talked about this before. I mean, if you listen to our back catalog of 500 episodes, there's several times we've talked about some guy who thought he can get away with having sex with a Neanderthal or Denisovan.
Yes. And
didn't realize that his booty call would be immortalized, you know, thousands of years in the future.
Yeah, like his buddies stayed quiet about it, but some nerdy scientist with fucking glasses decided to expose him years later.
And in somewhere in the afterlife, he's taken shit from all of his, you know, early hominid friends and everything. What I want is for science to become so good that we found out that in this pairing, the male only lasted about 20 seconds. Like that's...
And then, like, I would love to see the science they used on that.
We were able to measure a satisfaction meter, and his partner was very unsatisfied.
We called it the psiometer, like, ugh.
We can tell here that he didn't try to make up for it by going downtown or using his hands at all. Like, he just got up and walked away.
Actually, we were able to tell that the female Denisovan's actual comment was, the bad news was he finished really fast, but the good news was he finished really fast.
Anytime you have to start with, is it in yet? It's just not a good... You just know this is not going to be a memorable event.
So we had the record of these guys from the Denisovan cave, and we had some DNA from them from a small pinky bone. We have since found a few more bones in that cave. And then, like I said, we found some genetic signatures and living people. We also found a jawbone. We covered this on the Tibetan plateau, and we said, we think this is Denisovan, but we couldn't actually get DNA from it. And the only way we could tell was a little bit of morphology, but also... they did a protein analysis, and that protein analysis seemed to indicate it was Denisovan, but people were skeptical because that protein analysis is a new technique. It's not 100%. So we weren't completely sure, but we were pretty sure we had some Denisovan remains in this Tibetan plateau. In fact, we now know that some of the genes that allow certain people who live there naturally, the Tibetans that live there naturally, to exist up so high are actually genes that we inherited from Denisovans. They are the ones who evolved these high altitude genes, and we just grabbed it from them, and they spread around really well in that Tibetan population. So there was clearly some mating. The Denisovans had lived there for a while. We decided to go excavate a cave that we thought might have Denisovan remains based on its proximity to that jawbone that was found a few years ago. So they started excavating this cave, and they found occupation times based on the hearths there at 100,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago, and also possibly 45,000 years ago. Everything newer than that was kind of too much disturbance to tell. So they could have come back after that. They could have been there, blah, blah, blah. But after about 45,000 years, there was just too much damage to that those layers of soil to tell. But we knew for sure that there was an occupation there at those times. We found 1,310 simple stone tools, 579 pieces of bone from animals, including rhinos and hyenas, a bunch of stuff that indicated occupation. And then they wanted to get DNA. And here is the thing that's really cool, because this is another thing where when this first came out, and this was about 2.5-3 years ago, I said, oh my God, this is amazing. Watch this. We are going to see some amazing discoveries come from this. And what it was a new technique where they could actually get DNA from the soil. Meaning we could test soil samples, and because those Denisovans living in there would bleed and sweat and poo and pee and die and be buried, et cetera, et cetera, even if we didn't necessarily have bones, we could actually test the soil and find individual like cell stuffs, like with like little cells that are there, shed in there, of DNA of these things within the soil. And when that technology first came out a few years ago, I said, watch this space. We are going to see a shitload of human evolution papers come out of this, and this is the first big one. So this technology was used, and they found Denisovan mitochondrial DNA in that cave in those time periods, 100,000, 60,000, 45,000. That 45,000 kind of overlaps with the time period when modern Homo sapiens were coming into the area. So this is probably, we're probably seeing like the occupation area from when this group mated. Very, very, very cool. It's amazing because we are now seeing the species that we didn't know existed 15 years ago. And it turns out they were dominating half of the Earth for hundreds of thousands of years. And we are just now discovering their secrets. This is the first confirmed DNA that we have of this species outside of that one tiny cave in Siberia. And this is a species, again, we now think because of genetic evidence, went all the way to these Southeast Asian islands. Super cool. We are just slowly unraveling the history of mankind with more and more discoveries. And you literally heard about the groundbreaking technology that this is based on this very show 2.5-3 years
ago. Star Talk.
No, damn it. They wouldn't understand.
So we don't really know what the Denisovan looks like, do we? Like, we can guess, but we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Right, because we don't have a nearly...
Now we can clone it. Can we clone it now? That's the only reason for this question. We have DNA. Bam. Do I get a Denisovan sex slave or sidekick, comedy-wise?
To be fair, all we have in this cave is mitochondrial DNA, and that's not nuclear DNA, so we could not clone it from that. I believe there is nuclear DNA from the Denisovan cave itself in Siberia. We could, maybe, I don't know if they have complete sequences. They probably don't. So I'm going to guess that they probably don't have enough to do a full
clone. We got frog DNA?
The problem is, when we tried that last time, that is how we got transgendered people, Damien. We've tried to replace people's DNA with frog DNA, and that is what led to this transgender takeover of our society.
It shows a conservative hunter male and try to enter a men's restroom and just sees a transgendered Denisovan. Clever girl. Now get the hell out, man.
But before he did, he looked down and his water glass just had these ripples going in.
Yeah, that was from his throbbing erection at seeing somebody live outside a sexuality that didn't bore him.
Oh, dear. Very cool article. I love to see things come full circle. Both of these were things that we had kind of talked about previous iterations of, so it's nice to see more stuff come out. And this Denisova news is just amazing. Like I said, it is so cool that we can pull up dirt and get DNA out of it, and also do optical luminescence on the fires and the things that we're finding around it to tell the dating. And by doing that, we piece together a huge piece of the missing puzzle of our shared human history without even having a bone. Like, there's no bones there. I guess there's a jaw that was found nearby, but like, it had nothing to do with that. It was looking at dirt and tools and stuff. It's just amazing. It is such a cool time to be alive and have access to science journals.
So wait, they pooped and peed in the caves in which they lived? I think we figured out why they aren't around anymore.
Yeah, that's pretty common when you're at, I think these guys are at like 10,000 feet and it's snowing and stuff. So yeah, every once in a while, you're just going to have to take shit in the cave. Like, sorry, guys, like this has happened. It's like if you're in a road trip and you're not going to stop and somebody has to pee in a Gatorade bottle.
Or, you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning because the rancid meat you have is just running through you.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's 4 a.m. I'm not pooping out in the blizzard.
This is everyone's problem now.
Yeah. In fact, I'm pooping right by the fire. It's way too cold.
That was the original burning rubber. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 506, where you learned all about why your body temperature is going down and an amazing history of Denisovans that got pulled right out of the dirt. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 507.
Oh, no. Quick. Everybody in the village, hide. The mad comer is back. No habla español.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait. That's not right.